How would you like to recover from bankruptcy or a financial disaster and master your cash flow or your business cash flow? Al Zenick will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Al is that he's a CPA and a personal financial specialist. And he's the author of best-selling books, Master Your Cash Flow and Master Your Business Cash Flow. And as an entrepreneur, he has founded many businesses. Most recently, he co-founded Cake Club, a fintech company, and he's the creator of the Cake Club app, a financial tool to educate users on how to make the best financial decisions, find cash flow, and achieve their financial goals sooner and live the life they wish along the way. And he recently co-founded Tyrus Pictures, a feature film production company headquartered in LA, and he spends his time between Miami and Paris. So, Al, tell us about what got you interested in helping people to recover from bankruptcy and financial disasters and to master their cash flow.
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Well, I know I'm probably the poster child for that. When I was in my 20s, as of today, I'm very, very ambitious, wanted to get out there, grow businesses, help people. And so I started a CPA firm, but then I got into real estate to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, development, building, buying and renting, managing, and probably another two or three small businesses on the side. If there was a 15 minutes spare in a day, I filled it up with something. And but what I didn't do very well is I didn't pick some good partners sometime, but I didn't watch my cash flow. The way I ran my businesses, as long as I had enough money in my bank account, I could afford anything. And then, you know, the economy turned a bit, not disastrously, but enough to all of a sudden, a lot of my businesses were in a negative cash flow. And the real estate business was particularly hit hard. So I found myself literally overnight, all my cash was gone. And I had negative cash flow to the tune of many tens of thousands of dollars a month. And quite frankly, I did not know what to do. Now, I was also raised in a family where, you know, you don't ask for help. You suck it up. You solve your own problems because asking for help is weakness. But I remember the night I went home and told my wife in our living room that, you know, by the time we're done this, I don't think we're going to be able to hold this house. And she cried. And then she said, what do we have to do? But it was a long slog. But then I realized I had to ask for help. I had a very good mentor who basically said, Al, this is an attorney. He's a workout attorney. Call him up. Start to take action. I did. I started head on. I met with banks. I met with people. Had to give away property. I recovered from some. And but then also my core business was suffering, the accounting firm. So I wanted to find another product. I wanted to find something else to sell. So I heard about this thing called financial planning, wealth management. And I contacted this guy, Daryl Kane, in Texas and in Dallas. And I said, I know you offer this product. I want to offer it to my clients. So I flew down to see him and I said, well, how do I do this? And he said, well, do you have a financial plan? I said, no. I always do my tax returns last. I always do everything last. My clients come first. He said, it doesn't work that way. He sat me down and he made me go through a quasi-financial plan with him. And I knew I was in bad shape, but I didn't realize how bad until I saw what he was putting on paper for me. And I thought to myself, my God, am I going to be working till I'm 80? Am I ever going to stop working? Am I ever going to live the life I want? And then he says, now, Al, this is how people feel when they have problems like this. And he said, you're going to meet a lot of people like that if you do financial planning. And so he said, now, let me tell you how to resolve this. So he taught me things I didn't know, financial principles, and he guided me. And what he taught me was so powerful that from that planning session, I wanted to be independent or financially free by 50. I got there by 48. But what was really powerful for me is that him and others reached out to help me, and I wanted to help others. And I knew I could not change a person's life with a better tax return as an accountant, but I could change their life by having them, by teaching principles of financial planning and getting into financial freedom. So I went back to my company, my main company, the accounting firm. I told my partners, I said, we're going to change this company and we're going to offer this. And they said, we don't think so. So I had to break up that firm and started eventually Trout Salas Wealth Management, which we specialized in financial planning, investment advisory, and tax returns. But what it did for me is also kept me on a path where my mission, I developed my mission to be is a positive, powerful, and successful influence in the lives of others. To find the greatness in people and have them achieve what they wish, their potential in life. I say this to myself every day. And that's how basically I, again, how I eventually handled my getting out of bankruptcy. But what I would tell a person who's an entrepreneur or any business, in fact, if you work for someone, if you're in trouble, ask for help. Look around for who's successful. Who do you think can give you a hand? And especially in business, learn to pivot. Learn to where, like, if your product changes, your market changes, change the product. You know, like I added financial planning. Surround yourself with really great people, great mentors. And most of all, pick something you love and have fun.
Thank you. Tell us, for someone who is in financial disaster at the moment, what would be the very first step they should do?
Well, the very first step, and when you say financial disaster, where I was and most people, is that all of a sudden you can't pay your bills. Let's say your bills personally, or your, if you have no business, a business on, you can't pay your staff or whatever. Well, the first thing that you do is you basically stop paying your vendors. Call them up. You already, maybe months later on that, call them up and say, look, I can't pay you now, but you stay with me. I need your services. I'll start paying you again on the back portion in 3, 4, 5 months. Now, some will say, a lot will say yes, some will say no. That way you say, look, if you don't do this, I'm going to get someone else. So you eventually, so what you start to do is look at how your cash flow is. If you have a business, or again, an individual, people owe you money. Really get on your accounts receivable, call them up. You know, if they're really late, you may have to start action against them. Get that down. So if you do that, that's another thing. Another thing is you look at your business expenses in your business. Do you have to lay off staff? I eventually laid off a third of the staff of my own company. We're not pleasant, but I had to do it for the company to survive. Look at other expenses. We had consultants, other things that we didn't need. So we just basically laid them off or fired them. And then finally, look for another source of cash. So if you're in a business, pivot, see if you can have another product, open another location, do something like that. If you're working for someone, maybe have a side gig. Especially with the younger generation today, it's not hard to start a business to help people build their websites, maybe do something with DoorDash, with Uber, or do other things like that, or become a real estate agent, other things like that. But the thing is now focus on how to raise cash flow. Give you an example of what I did with a business once. I served on the board of this medical services business. It was decently a good size. And we hit a recession, and they basically the CEO called the board. I served on the board together and said, "Look, we have a $50,000 a month cash flow gap, and I only have a few hundred thousand dollars left in the bank. I only have 5 to 6 months. What do I do?" So I let everyone answer. Then they came to me, and I had worked myself out of this, so I knew what to do. I said, "Well, I see the biggest expense you have is you have leases for equipment." And as a medical company, they leased a lot. I said, did you call them up to renegotiate? He said, yes, I did. They wouldn't do that. Oh, okay, fine. Stop paying them. If you stop paying for them, you become the squeaky wheel. They're going to call you really quick. Because especially in a recession, other people are having that problem too. So so he eventually, through, I coached him on it. He called them up. And they were able to save literally like $75,000 a month, just from the renegotiation of those leases alone. So the one thing you don't want to do is hide and pretend it's not there and wait till like they're coming to foreclose on your house or take your car. Ask for help. Get out there. Meet it head on and resolve it.
Thank you. So would you say that the very first step is actually even knowing your situation? Like, because I think maybe a lot of business owners don't even know like where they stand with their business. So where would they go to
Good
kind of
point.
find out? Is it like, would they do like some rough numbers themselves? Would they hire someone?
All right, good. That's a very good question. So you're right. When you have a problem like that, the first thing is to find out how big the problem is. So what you do, if you're a business, you look at, especially last month, what did I bring in and what went out? Do a simple budget, like what came in, and hopefully it's in the positive, but most likely it may not. Then you go through that and say, well, where can I cut? What can I add? A lot of entrepreneurs are really great visionaries and they're great with ideas, but they're really not great at managing their business and managing their cash flows. So most of them I would get is if I get a financial person to help you. It could be your accountant, you get a bookkeeper. And in fact, any business I start, like the two recently, I immediately put in a bookkeeper, a financial reporting system, because I want to know what comes in and out every month. But in this case, too, just knowing what comes in and out every month is not enough for a business. You must project. So start with the month, but then with your bookkeeper or accountant, try to project the next 3 months, 6 months, year. See if there's a seasonality. See if there's going to be some months which will be better in cash than others. It's going to help you plan better for that.
Thank you. For companies where I guess this is a general this is general thing that happens for all companies. I assume the next step would be to look at what you can add in terms of income and what you can subtract in terms of cost and what kind of cost saving you can do. So, can you give us some cost saving activities that a company might implement to basically keep more of their income?
Right. Before we go there, though, it's very important for you brought up know what comes in and comes out. The second is to target it, is to know how much you need to come in and out. Because if you don't know that, then you don't know what to really cut or add. So let's talk about what to cut. Let's talk about what to cut first. What you do is you go through everything, you cut all unnecessary staff. You cut that saves on payroll and any benefits. You basically, if you were giving to the 401k or bonuses, you basically stop that. You look at any kind of contracts you have with consultants or services. You go back to renegotiate or look at the ones you really don't you don't you can do without. And then finally, most companies have some sort of debt, leases or whatever. Go and renegotiate your leases and your loan with your bank. So that's on the expense end. Now on the cash end. See if there's any kind of service that you're providing that is causing the issue, like you're spending more on that than what's coming in. You may have to cut down on a service or replace it. And then look around for what else you can add. Again, not only look at what people owe you in receivables to get that in, but what you can add, another service that's complementary to the one you have. Or another way is also see if there's a way to raise your pricing. I remember one business that I was in. They basically were having some issues, so we raised their prices across the board about 2 or 3 or 5%, and immediately they basically were in a positive cash flow again. So you can have any kind. You can have pricing strategies, a new business or a new business line. Make sure that you're saving those receivables, and make sure you don't give out credit loosely. When you're given your service, you get paid immediately, or you get deposits and be paid immediately.
Thank you. For a company, how could they figure out that a company that is, let's say, making a lot of money, let's say millions, how can they figure out why, let's say, they're not as profitable as they would like? Now, I'll give you a very funny example, okay? My former business partner used to have a restaurant, and at some point, I think when he was starting his business, he printed out these 2-for-1 lunch menu deals, and he didn't put an expiry date. So basically, people had gathered hundreds of those kind of lunch menu vouchers, and they were coming and using it every day. And that was meant to be like a one-off kind of thing, like a week thing, kind of to get people in interested, but it was not going to be profitable over the long term if it was sustained, you know, for a long period of time. But he had to do this for months and months because people kept, you know, they had saved this kind of voucher in their home, and they were kind of, you know, they kept using that particular voucher, and he went bankrupt, you know, I mean, with that particular business. And so I'm wondering about what kind of strategies can a company that is bringing a lot of money, what kind of strategies can they use to figure out actually where is the culprit? Why is the company not as profitable as we would like, let's say?
Okay, let's start with your friend first. It was a major mistake, obviously, to order something without expirations. But if he did that, you can correct it. He immediately should have put up a sign that says, coupons, these things expire this date. Anything you're holding expires this date. He would have warned people. So he wouldn't have had it going for months and months. Again, see, keep in mind, this is a person. If he had someone coaching him or had someone like that he could talk to and said, look, I would have told him that. Do that immediately. All right, so that's him. So there's many companies. By the way, when you said that, I'm not sure you saw this, but Red Lobster, the company, the restaurant, did a promotion, all-you-can-eat buffet on all their seafood, and they were getting hammered because people would come in and eat pounds of it. So, and they had financial problems. Now, I don't know how they resolved it, but I think they had to stop that all-you-can-eat. But for other companies, what I suggest is that sometimes as an owner or a CEO, you're too close to the business, call in an accountant, call in someone. There are people out there that are workout people that basically come into a company and you give them a different view. Like, for example, when I was on the board of that company and the CEO said, well, we try to lease we try to renegotiate the leases. I said, well, again, I had another view. I said, well, stop paying them. Make them negotiate that way and tell them what you need. So that's one way to do it. Another thing is ask your team. If you have some employees, people, I used to, with my company, every once in a while, we'd get together in staff meetings, and I would give them a reward, 10% for anyone, 10% of the savings as people come up with a savings idea. And you'd be shocked what they were coming out with, whether it was save it on a copier service, save it on a clean service. So I would do that. So go to your own management team, go to your own team, get an outside expert or an outside person to come in and take a look at the business or a workout company.
Thank you. For companies that use incentives in order to acquire new clients, like offering like a large sum of money to kind of get them to switch from a company to another, to theirs, and how can a company kind of like manage that process so that it doesn't affect their cash flow too much?
Well, for one thing, know how much you have to spend per client to service them. I was in a wealth management business. We knew exactly what our average income from our clients was, our receipts, and what our average costs were. All right. Now, why didn't he need to know that? Because if you don't know what it costs you for a client and you're going to give away money for them, you want to make sure you're going to profit from them. That's one. If you're doing that and you've hired a person or a salesperson to do that, make sure that you say, okay, if you're going to give them a certain incentive for that, that the client has to stay for so long. That if the client does not stay for so long, they don't get paid. Because you have people out there that will just churn. They'll take it from one person to another. I would also make sure that if you're going to give the incentive, again, know the amount of incentive and that it somehow decreases. So, for example, we used to have with our salespeople that if you brought in a client, let's say you got 10% of the first year's revenue. And for that client, then it went down to 5%, then 3%, then zero. Do not have an evergreen agreement where you're constantly paying for this new client. Those are some of the things that I would do.
Thank you. What are the biggest disasters that you've seen, financial disasters, that have led to people's almost bankruptcies? And was there anything you would have put in place to help them to master their cash flow? It's either something that you read in a magazine or some clients that you've worked with where you've helped them.
Well, I had a client that was owned a very large construction company and real estate investment company, and he also owned a restaurant. And quite frankly, and they hired me to help and look at their operation, whatever. And I told them, for one thing, one of the partners, there were really three, one of the partners was not pulling their weight, and actually was very poor and making very bad decisions. So I suggested that they replace the partner. I suggested that they bring in a new chief operating officer or financial person, because the one they had was just too light. And quite frankly, they ignored a lot of my advice, and they went under. They went under. And quite frankly, this was a solvable issue. If they just made a couple of adjustments, these people would have been fine. And that was a pretty big disaster. That involved tens of millions of dollars in real estate. It was a shame. It really wiped out a family that basically they were older and quite frankly had very little left to go into retirement.
Thank you. Do you have any other case studies that you can share that led to financial disasters, and what would you have done to help them master their cash flow?
Well, I'm not sure they've been disasters, but there's many businesses that have had negative cash flow that I've gone into. And the first thing that I do is I ask them, how often do you look at your financial statements? You'd be shocked. Most people, but a lot of entrepreneurs don't even look at them. So I get them into the habit of doing that. I think you should be looking at your cash flow statements minimally every 15 days, 15th and end of the month. I start to put in, I also sit down and grade the staff or grade the management and the people that are in key positions. Most time what entrepreneurs do is when they start businesses or it grows, they keep the same people. They just keep on bumping them up. So all of a sudden the receptionist now becomes the office manager, now becomes the this. And they basically get to a point, a level of the business that they're really not effective. So I look at that. Again, all the other things that I've said, but I guess another sad case I saw, there was this ceramics business, very fine ceramic business, not pottery, but very fine engineered for engineering companies, whatever. This family had this company for like 40 years. And one of the things that they didn't do, the owner was getting older and he didn't have any succession plan. And then he started to have problems in the business. So basically I helped him put together a succession plan, but he ignored that and he just wanted his son to run the business. The son was not adequate to run the business. I could see that. I warned him. Within a year or two, the business went under. And again, the primary owner, his father, all of his wealth was in this business. So eventually it was a sad case to where not only did he lose his business, which was in the millions, if not tens of millions of dollars, he lost his home, he lost everything. It was really sad.
Thank you. What are the biggest mistakes that entrepreneurs make when it comes to mastering their cash flow?
Well, like you pointed out at the beginning, they don't know what comes in. They don't know what goes out. They don't run statements on a periodic basis. They don't hire the right people. Most of them are good ideas people, but they don't surround themselves with good people. They're not a very good managerial. So I always tell them to get what I call A-type players, A-type staff. They normally don't. A-type is the people that are really great. If they're B status, they're okay, but you're looking for A's. If they're C's, they must be fired immediately because they're costing you much more money than they're worth. So I find that they don't take action soon enough. Sometimes what they do, which is a sad thing, it happens quite often, is if their business starts to have problems, they start putting their own money back into it. And I've seen where they raid their pensions, they put their 401ks in there to a point they're down to zero, and the company can do nothing else than close its doors. So I would caution any entrepreneur, if you're in a position, or a business owner, if you're in a position where you're putting in your own money to handle that negative cash flow, and especially your pension or IRA, do not do that. Do not do that because you will destroy yourself. Not only the company will be destroyed financially, you'll destroy yourself financially.
Thank you. What are some underrated or surprising cash flow sources that people overlook?
Well, again, like your friend, they don't think they have the power to do certain things. Like, for example, they don't think they can fire people sometime. They don't think they can reduce salaries. Like, for example, in one particularly severe recession, I went to my staff and said, I went to my partners and said, we're all going to take a 25% cut in our compensation. Most people would be afraid to do that. I went to the staff and said, there's no raises, there's no bonuses, and there's no contribution to your 401k for at least the next year. Now, they knew I was taking action, and they knew I was saving the company, so they didn't mind. But so people are sometimes afraid to ask, afraid to act. They get into, they fool themselves that it's going to be okay in the future. And by the way, since I was there and I almost went under at a young age, by the time we got to next recessions, I was well prepared. I never had to lay off any person in the future. I knew how to take action immediately and what to do. But I think it's inaction is the action that most people take when it comes when their company has problems.
Thank you. Tell us about the mindset shifts someone would have to put in place in order to go from near failure to financial success.
Well, I only say my own mind shift is that I was so desperate. I finally, even though I hated asking people for help, I did it. And what I was shocked to learn is that many people wanted to help. They went out of their way to help me. I was so grateful. That's why, eventually, I shifted to where I wanted to help other people. But, I remember one time a person telling me, a consultant telling me that when people hit a financial rough patch, like near bankruptcy, there's two kinds of people. There's ones that recognize it and take action. There are people that hopes that it goes away. And he happened to be in real estate. And what he did, he would go to homes that were like under foreclosure, and he would try to speak to the owners of the homes. He'd rap on the door. And he said the ones who answered the door, he knew they wanted to somehow solve the issue. The ones who, he said many times though, they pulled down their shades, they would answer the door because they thought it was a bill collector or whatever. They ignored it. This happens in business also. Like that one construction business I told you, they ran their business into the ground. Rather than take unpleasant action, like firing people, firing consultants, so the mind shift has to be that you're there to basically save the business. It doesn't really matter. If the business does not exist, your employees will not get paid, you will not get paid, your vendors will not get paid. So the mind shift has to be, rather than you looking good or poor you, is that I have to take action whether people like it or not. So I think there's a big mind shift there of looking good or being a really great executive or a savvy business owner.
Thank you. How can someone implement systems, procedures, or AI in order to master their cash flow?
Well, especially for me, as I'm older, especially when you're in a millennial or you get older, you better hire some really young people. Better hire some Gen Zers. So you surround yourself, like, again, with the Cake Club. Almost our entire staff is Gen Z. What are we doing there? We're actually implementing AI. So if you go to the kclubapp.com site, on every sheet down in the right-hand corner, if you click that on, another pop-up will come up, and it says, Ask Albert. And it's basically all my stuff, all my books, my articles are put into our AI. And so you can ask a question, and it'll answer you like the way I did, or I would. We're also going to put that on our phone app too. So the thing is, I would think today is like, keep in mind, it's a goal. It's the same rule for whether it's AI or anything else. Don't pretend you're the smartest person in the room. Hire some people smarter than you. Go out and hire people that really know AI or whatever kind of system electronically or whatever you're doing. Make sure they're experienced in it, and then make them accountable to make sure they're putting into the systems that you want.
Thank you. I'm kind of gradually getting into deal making because I'm attracting a lot of multimillionaires. They have deals. Some of them buy stuff. Some of them sell stuff. like properties and, you know, thousands of properties, or, you know, some of them are looking for millions and, you know, in funding and so on. And one thing that I've struggled with in the past, and you can say still do, is kind of like delegating, especially because I find, you know, like people come to me and it's kind of very easy for them to come to me. And I've had people in the past that have poached my staff. And it's very hard for me to kind of think of, okay, I'm going to hire this person as a deal manager to handle what I could do. And, you know, considering that I can do hundreds of deals that I can connect people with, you know, like if I trust myself, but other people, not as much. So I'm wondering, like, how do you cope with trust in terms of like being able to delegate to other people, knowing that there could be the danger that, you know, a lot of different things could go wrong, including, you know, people actually, you know, taking all of these different deals for themselves, or, you know, people hiring or poaching my staff and, you know, this kind of thing. Like, I'm wondering, how do you deal with that?
Well, keep in mind that delegation is the CEO or business owner's disease. We all, as we're growing a business, we can do it better. We can do it quicker. We're better at it. And, you know, and we are normally. But the thing is, you're not going to be able to expand. It's going to drive you crazy. You'll be working 24/7 and you'll be less effective. So what I would do, and again, it was tough for me too, but I eventually had a staff of 34, 40 people. And what you do is you get good managers or people, but you make sure you make them accountable and you make sure you protect them yourself. So I would say, especially in your case, having where there's deals and confidential information and contacts like that, is make sure that they, your staff has, you have confidentiality agreements and, you know, covenants not to compete that are going to be okay for your area. Make sure you have a good attorney and make sure everyone signs it. If they don't sign it, they should be replaced immediately. Right, that's one. Two, you know, find someone good and let them run a little bit, but have some rope. Make them accountable. I don't really pretend to understand your business totally, but let's say you expect this one person that you're paying to have 10 deals in a year, or a deal a month, or 5 prospects a month. Give them a key performance indicator. Give them guideposts that's going to allow you to see if they're actually living up or they're doing what you want them to. So again, in our business, what we had for our salespeople was that they had to contact, let's say, 100 people a week, either calls or I'm making that up. All right. They had, and of those, they had to have at least 2 or 3 or 5 leads. Of those, we had to close on one of them. So you look at their closing percent, you look at their percents like this, that's a way to make them accountable. So rather than trying to be everything to your business, be the manager of the people that are going to drive your business to really scale. Because if you don't do that, you won't scale. And by the way, I know businesses that stay small. They have 4 or 5 people. They're really great, profitable business, but they know that's all they're going to grow because they don't want to be a bigger firm because that's more bureaucracy, administration, and they can't get over the owner's disease that there's no one out there that can do better than themselves.
Thank you. What other, for example, for succession or exit planning, what's important to put in place to make sure that everything kind of runs smoothly in a company?
All right. So what you want, for one thing, as a company grows, I this is in general, I think if you're a growing company, every 5 years, you have to shake up management. Why? Because the person, the manager or CEO you had when the company was this size, now you're 2 or 3 times larger, they may not know how to handle a company that size. So I've had to replace staff, management staff, every 5 or 6 years. Now, that's one way. So you want really good, solid management. Why? Because if you are the owner, something happens, or you want to be able to have a partner or management that can come in and run the business at least temporary. Okay. Another thing is to have a board of advisors that basically can step in to be there. If you have a family, like I had two sons, one son wanted to be the next president. I had to let him know when he was 25. I had to tell him, Al, I had other people and all that. what you're talking about happens in the movies. You know, dad doesn't retire, and then you become the president. But, and by the way, I had a, he was part of my succession plan, but eventually we didn't get along in the business, and I had to fire him. That's a whole other story or a podcast in itself, dealing with relations. But eventually you get strong people. And I guess lastly, as an owner, you got to be, you have to be honest with yourself. Do you have the horses to take over if you're not around? And in my case, I had very strong management. And I actually talked to one or two about taking over the reins when I left. But they didn't want it. They were happy being in the second position or third position. So eventually what I had to do is I had to sell the company. Because if I did not sell the company and something happened, what would happen? The company would collapse. I would lose all my value. My estate would lose all its value. So I basically I actually tried to buy some other companies to do to take care of that, but that did not work. So I eventually sold myself to a much larger company. And what I did by doing that is I made sure my staff was taken care, my clients were taken care, and it's just as importantly, I made sure that the value of the company stayed intact or higher so that my family, myself, and my partners were taken care of.
Thank you. Tell us about how entrepreneurs can make better financial decisions every day. And I'm talking, for example, do you advise people to perhaps reduce the number of coffees that they have at Starbucks? Do you advise them to reduce the little tiny things that compounded can make a big difference? Or are you of the opinion that, no, you have your own coffee, you have five coffees a day if you want to, but just bring, you know, more money? What's the thing that you generally advise people to do so that they make general better financial decisions for their life and family and their business?
Okay. So the first thing, our philosophy is that you shouldn't have to deprive yourself of how you want to live your life, your daily life. Because, you know, what fun is it to deprive yourself to just make a plan? So we believe in that. So I have never told a client that they can't go to Starbucks, they can't decrease their vacations or anything, right? But make smarter financial decisions, right? So where do you begin? You begin by saying, okay, for you to achieve the goals you want, how much wealth do you need? So that's the wealth at the end. You backtrack it. How much do you have to earn? And of those earnings, what's your lifestyle and what do you have to earn above that? If you see that you're not earning the enough money to save for your wealth in the future and your lifestyle, something's got to change. And what we do is say, okay, ask for a raise, do other things, make your business decisions to make more money or spend better, redo your debt, reconstruct your debt, do other things that I covered before. But what we do is we have a process also called the wealth building formula. And what that is the amount of money you need to save times time, times the rate of return you get on your portfolio equals the wealth you'll need. I want people to, I always want clients to understand the relationship between wealth and those that formula. For example, if you have to save $25,000 a year to be independent, whatever, all right? And you want to do that over 15 years, right? And you need to earn 6 or 8%. Okay, let's say instead of saving $25,000 a year, you can save 40 or 30 or more. And you do that. What happens to the other components? Time goes down. You get there quicker. Or you need less rate of return, so you need a more conservative in your portfolio. What happens if you have to save $25,000, but you only save $15,000? Time goes up. Amount that you have to earn in your portfolio or risk goes up. If you know those relationships, then all of a sudden, let's say you're making a decision today. I have to buy a new piece of equipment for the office. It's going to cost $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, right? I can take that $25,000 out of my bank account and pay it off, or I can lease it, or I can have debt. If you take 25% off your pile of money, that means you have to work longer. So you want to keep that there. So you might take out a loan. Taking out a loan allows the business to basically pay for and get tax deductions, and you can still save your $25,000. See, most people don't know how to make those decisions when they go out to buy a car, when they buy a house. A house, how much you put down. You know, how much you put down and how much you have to pay for all these other things for the house means you're either going to take away from your wealth or add to it. So every decision you make is, the answer is, make the decision that's going to add more dollars to your cash flow every day.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Well, they can go to kclubapp.com and they can ask Albert, or they can inquire about me and our services. They want to find out about me more, about me personally, you can go to al@alzenic.com and you'll see all my articles, you'll see what I've done, and maybe something will appeal to you there.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.